I got better at live shots when I felt better about myself, when I had more confidence in myself, when I stood in my authenticity, my little bit of awkwardness, you know, like I embraced that. That's when I got better. So people oftentimes, if they stutter or if they miss a word, it could throw them completely off. But they don't recognize that when you're talking to your friend, when we're having conversation, we do that naturally, right? Our voice goes up, our voice goes down. And so once somebody's in front of a camera, even if it's their cell phone, they just morph into something else, as opposed to understanding it's speaking to one, not speaking to a whole crowd.
Welcome to Life After Corporate, your ultimate guide for making the leap from corporate leader to entrepreneur. I'm Deb Boulanger, entrepreneur, executive leader, and founder of the Launch Lab for Women Entrepreneurs. This is your time to break through the glass ceiling once and for all and get your ticket to the C-suite. Come back each week to get the leading strategies, advice, and tools that will give you the skills and confidence you need to replace your corporate paycheck. Are you ready? Let's go. Welcome to another episode of Life After Corporate, my friends. And if you're new to our show, welcome home. This is where you get real life strategies on what it takes to build a successful coaching or consulting business after leaving your corporate job. And today we're talking about that journey to entrepreneurship from a journalist point of view, which is very interesting. I always think that journalists make the best marketers. And today we are speaking with Andrea Klein Thomas about her journey from successful media journalist to entrepreneur and how she is now helping other entrepreneurs increase their media presence. Welcome, Andrea, to Life After Corporate.
I'm so happy to be here. I really enjoy your podcast, so thank you for having me.
Oh, thank you for the podcast, love. I love that. I love hearing from people who love the show. So you know what we're about.
Yeah.
We're about the real talk about what it takes to really build a business. And so you launched your business recently. So tell us your life after corporate journey. What made you make the leap from what feels like a very successful media career? And what brought the realization that now is the time to change and do something different?
Yeah, I mean, it was successful by all standards, by all cultural measurements, right? I had won the awards. I got to New York, which is the number one market. I was a local news reporter and fill-in anchor, meaning that I was out in the streets telling all of the stories or in the studio on the desk, kind of leading coverage of what the news of the day was. There were a lot of realizations that I had, though. I think that I wasn't immune to the impact of COVID and really taking that as a moment to really reflect on where I was in my life and where I wanted to go. And I just kind of found that the effort that I was putting out there was no bigger effort than being out in the street during a global pandemic in the center of a global pandemic and really understanding the effort that I was putting out there and quantifying what I was getting back in return and understanding that imbalance. And then really thinking ahead of, okay, well, could that change over time? Is there something I could do to help change that trajectory over time? And it really, in my estimation of what my trajectory was going to be, that imbalance was going to last forever in terms of what I value. I value my family, spending time with them. I got to see them, but I didn't get a whole lot of days off. And it's a career where you have to be available all the time, literally all the time, whether it's 7 days a week or from, you know, going in at 2 a.m. or working till midnight. Like, it just depended on the day, right? What schedule you were working. Generational wealth, I saw that the increases were just going to be smaller and smaller. Like, I wasn't going to get to that point financially that I really wanted to be in. I'm a single woman. I'm 41 years old. And then also travel. Like, I like to just go and explore. That's such a joy of mine. And when you don't have a lot of time off, you can't go travel, you know? And I was navigating spending time off to see family or going to explore. And I'm always having to split that. And so I just really believed hard work was never a problem for me. I had done all the things and I had the marketable skills. So I was like, well, let me try it my way. I said, let me give myself 2 years, 2 years to try it my way and see what will happen. And so I'm still within that 2 year window, but I kind of know too much now to turn back.
Right? Yeah. Once you get the taste of living in alignment with your values, yeah. Even though it takes time to replace that corporate paycheck, the benefits of living in alignment with your values can sometimes outweigh the funds in your bank account.
Yeah.
And even though that's a temporary state, right?
Right.
So it's a temporary state that you're in as you build up this business. But yeah, love of travel versus, you know, covering a robbery in Brooklyn, you know, that's not quite the travel you were looking for.
Exactly. Exactly. And also, yes, seeing, I'm so glad you said it that way, because it's like really seeing the world for, I wrote this in the email the other day. I was just like, you know, instead of talking about the problems, I want to be a part of the solution. And that's just also a fundamental shift in how I want to exist in the world and what I want to offer the world. So yeah, that's central to kind of what I'm hoping to do now.
Beautiful. And share what your experience has been so far. What have been some of the highlights? How long has it been since you left?
Okay, so I left in July of 2022. While I was building clients, I also had a bridge job that I treated as a client, but it was an actual job. And so then I left that in August of 2023. And so I am fully out here on my own now.
You're flying without a net.
I am flying without a net. So
I'm so glad you mentioned that bridge job too, because there's no one right way to move from a corporate job to entrepreneurship. And having a bridge job is a beautiful way to go. It allows you the freedom and flexibility and the part-time that you're not working for that company or doing that initiative or that project to really explore and get the confidence and education you need to succeed. What have been some of the high points for you in the last 18 months since you made that decision?
The exposure that I've gotten. In journalism, you get to see a lot of things and be around a lot of people. So you really feel like, wow, like I have a really good grasp on how the world works, on how, like what this ecosystem is. And now it is far bigger, like exponentially bigger than I even imagined, right? I kind of knew a little bit, but I did not know at all. And I did not know how much I had to learn. I had no idea. It's better that way though. It's better not to know how much I had to learn. But I have really enjoyed learning, and it has empowered me to say, like, I'm in charge. I'm in charge of my fate. And I just have so much confidence in myself and what I can achieve, and saying, like I can make it happen. I can have an idea and then bring it to fruition and it can happen. And it's like,
and then people pay you for your expertise. I mean, it's like a miracle.
Wild.
It's wild. And, you know, these are the things that corporate never wants you to know, because it's designed to keep you in a box, right? To keep you on your edge, keep you on your toes, you know, making sure that you don't take your position for granted and all of that. Once you break out of that patriarchal psychology, really, manipulation and control, and you see that, oh my God, I can create.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm so excited for this conversation, because I think journalists are the best marketers. Journalists are consummate storytellers. They're the people, you're the people that take complex information, make it simple, distill it down to its basic parts and make it interesting, you know? And I have learned so much from people in my circle who were former journalists. I guess you can take the journalists out of media, but you can't take the journalists out of the journalist.
Right.
That is something that you always take with you, is that ability to tell a story. And so now you're teaching others.
Yes. And another thing that we're able to do, which is kind of a harsh reality that kind of separates us from PR in a way, is that we're able to say, who cares? We're able to step outside of the product or the service and, like, I know that's your baby, but who cares, right? We have to storytell in a way that meets people where they are, as opposed to storytell just from our own personal emotional state. And because that's what we had to do, is that if somebody pitched us a story, we had to pitch it to our managers. And that's the first question, is who cares about this? Who does it impact? Why would anybody want to hear about this? And that's kind of like the thing people don't really say out loud, right? Is that's usually what separates who gets coverage and who doesn't get coverage, is being able to answer that fundamental question of who cares. So being able to step outside of yourself and not take it too personally is something that we're able to kind of assess things very quickly in that nature. So right now, what I'm doing is leveraging my journalism experience in two very distinct ways. One, it's providing media training. So helping people, if you want press, or you're going to be on the stage, any type of stage, if you're going to be interviewed in any type of way, helping people prepare for how to get their messages to land. Oftentimes people show up just wanting to be of service to the interviewer and not taking the driver's seat. So what I do is I help folks take the driver's seat in that interview so they can get benefit out of it and not just be of service to the person who's interviewing them, but that they go in with a clear plan of what they want to land and what they want to say. The other way is really helping individuals and companies with their storytelling, whether it be on the stage, whether it be on television, podcasts, and using videos specifically for storytelling. We all know now with social media, video is it. Video is really how you can cut through the noise. And so helping people craft their stories, helping people use their video in a way and allowing them to leverage it in a way to tell their stories.
That's wonderful and so important. And what I love about that is who cares, right? Is just asking yourself that. So you drop three questions. Who cares? What were the other two?
Who cares? What is it that going into an interview, kind of you have to have your own agenda as to what it is that you want to land. What is the narrative that you want to land in those interviews, and how to use video as part of your storytelling?
Yeah. And I think I want to rewind it. There were three questions that you asked when you pitched a story to your editor or producer.
Yeah.
You know, who cares? You know, who's going to watch it? Why does it matter?
Yes. It's how does it help our audience? Oftentimes, a lot of journalists do this, especially on LinkedIn right now, because some of them are my friends, are really talking about the pitches that they get, because 95% of the pitches end up deleted.
Yeah.
Or just not even, because it never really answers the real questions. And they pitch media like they're pitching a sales call. Very different. Very,
very different. So let's talk about that a little bit, because my theme for this year for our audience is innovation and innovation in how you show up, innovation in your messaging. And I believe this is the year where there's going to be a great fallout in the social media space of those who are true thought leaders and those who are adding to the noise or the static in the channel. And a lot of that is your ability to weave a powerful story. And who cares, I think, is a real fundamental question that you need to ask yourself for every single piece of content that you create. And if you find yourself sounding just like everybody else, using these platitudes, I mean, even things that were standout messaging a year ago are part of the noise now, like authenticity, like be authentic in your video. Well, okay, everyone's talking about authenticity. So I'm really interested in how you are coaching clients in this period of time when there's a lot of competition for ears and eyeballs. How can you stay authentic to your values, but also come out with a unique message that people are really going to care about and pay attention to?
I think you have to lean into your expertise. And what is it that you do and what qualifies you to do it? So if, you know, I would always ask, all right, so what are your customers telling you? Because now you have a critical mass of people who are now providing you information, and how have you distilled down that information, right? So that makes you an expert in that way. Where are you the expert? I think that's first where you have to start. Where are you the expert? And then it's like, how are you telling this story? Who are you talking to? What references can you use that your audience understands? What data can you use to kind of undergird the message? You don't want too much data, because then we call that data dumps, right? Then it's just like, I don't remember a million numbers, right? But there are specific numbers that can stick and that gives you that credibility. And how are you going to be vulnerable in that storytelling? So you're not, you know, I always say people listen to people, not robots. So I think that when we're talking about like authenticity, what when it doesn't come across as people trying to follow the trends, as opposed to saying, all right, even I have to do this with myself and in my business and how I'm approaching social media now, which is different than how I approached social media before. You know, I'm work with a social media company that like will send me stuff of like what the trends are. And I'm like, okay, great. Who am I? I start with, okay, who am I? Does this even align? Because some of them do not.
Yeah.
And so you don't do that, right? But who am I? What value can I add to this conversation? And what will my audience care about in this?
Okay.
It's always coming. You got to come back to center and have a sense of center. I think where people with anything, especially at interviews, where people really, where it goes left is when they're trying to be who they think they need to be or who they think other people need them to be, as opposed to who they are. That's when it just goes downhill. That's when they're sweating a lot. They're using words that they've never used before. They're using it in the wrong context because they're trying to be this idea of who they think they should be, as to being comfortable with who they are, understanding that's the magnet. And then you have these other tactics used with the numbers and the references that your audience will understand as a way to kind of solidify to undergird your message.
Yeah, I mean, that was a brilliant framework that you just delivered to the audience, which is, you know, who am I? What value can I add? Who cares? What's the stat around that? How can I be vulnerable and tell a story? And then what's the bottom line and the call to action?
Yeah.
You know, it's a great way to think about your messaging. And I love that because it's all about them, right? So it's all about the people who you're trying to reach and the people that you care about and the people that you serve. When you're out there in the media, the person who's interviewing you is your conduit and really your friend and your guide to help you get that message out in the most impactful way and being yourself. And I always think about, it's almost like I think about my last conversation with a potential client and where were they stuck? What was the belief that they had that wasn't serving them? And that provides really great fodder because people aren't islands. If there's one person who has this feeling or this thought that's not serving them, then there's probably hundreds of thousands of other people who are also thinking the same thing, stuck in the same place. So when you address that key issue in a very compassionate way, put some data behind it and also give people a way out by telling a story, or I like to think of it as a paradigm shift, a different way of thinking about it. Then you do something that leaves a memorable impression with your audience. And that's what we're about. What are some of the other mistakes that you see people make in media interviews or even in their videos on social media that kind of bring in the cringe factor, or for you, because you're an expert, right? So yeah. Bring in the cringe, like they could have been so much more effective.
I think it's just people really focusing on the performance as opposed to the mindset shift. When I was doing my live shots coming into the business, like writing was easy for me, interviewing people was easy for me, but the live shots, because I'm an introvert, was the part that I really had to work on. And I got better at live shots, not just when, because I had new tactics of how to like finesse it. I got better at live shots when I felt better about myself, when I had more confidence in myself, when I stood in my authenticity, my little bit of awkwardness, you know, like I embraced that, that's when I got better. So people oftentimes, if they stutter or if they miss a word, it could throw them completely off. But they don't recognize that when you're talking to your friend, when we're having conversation, we do that naturally, right? Our voice goes up, our voice goes down. And so once somebody's in front of a camera, even if it's their cell phone, they just morph into something else, right? As opposed to understanding it's speaking to one, not speaking to a whole crowd. speak to one, you know, speak to one person at a time, not the whole crowd, you know. And if you think of it, approach it in that way, some of that barrier that the screen has for you, that mental, because your mind will just turn on and off switches, right? Just some of those barriers that keep who you truly are from shining through will lessen if you just talk to one person at a time. That's how I always felt, is that when I was doing my stories, even though I'm in a big studio or whatever, it was just me and it was the camera technician behind. That's who I'm talking to, or my co-anchor. That's who I'm talking to, or the photographer on the other side of the, like, that's who I'm talking to. I didn't think of, oh, you know, millions of people have access to see me, or like, that'd be paralyzing. You're setting yourself up. Don't do that. You know, don't do that to yourself. That's too much pressure, right? But I was just talking to one person. How would one person really, how can I break this down so one person can really understand this?
And I think that there's a quality in speaking to one person that comes through on the screen, this relatability and this connection, that when you're talking about all people, or if you are one of many people, that's missed, because it's not like you're making this direct connection. So I think that was a real golden nugget for our listeners. I appreciate you for sharing that, Andrea, because I struggle with that personally. And, you know, I want to be relatable, but sometimes, you know, I can open up with just a comment like, no one's purchasing your self-worth.
Yeah.
And if your self-esteem is getting all tangled up in your pricing, then you're undercharging.
Yes.
You know, so those kinds of things, which are things I think about, and different ways I think about describing things to people that land, that make it memorable. And so also spending time in that stage of, you know, what value can I add, is, you know, how can I tell a story around this that's going to really make it land, really make it hit home?
Yeah.
You know, and when I said that in a live room, you know, women put their hands on their chest and said, ouch, you know, wow, this got me.
Yes. Yes. And, you know, and I would get, for so long, I'm just really passionate about people showing up kind of as themselves, because for so long I was so uncomfortable doing that.
Sure.
So just television as a business, you're told more about what you need to do and what you're not than really what you are. And so you need to sound this way, you need to dress this way, you need to look this way, your hair needs to be this way, especially as a woman. What you look like is the focus of a lot of conversation, right? If I told you some of the conversations that I've had with people about what I look like versus my intellect, there's a huge imbalance there. But it came to a point where I'm just like, you know what? It was actually a point where it was just kind of like, I don't think I'm doing this well, and I don't think I can please all these people. And you know what? If I'm going to go down in flames, I'm going to go down as myself. Like, this is just what's going to happen, right? And when I did that, that's when I got more connections with people just out in the world. Of people coming up to me, or people saying, oh, I really love your stories, of people, because I just was like, I can't fold myself anymore. Like, yeah, I just got to show up. And that's when I connected the most. And that was such great information for me and changed everything.
And thank you for doing that, because I know when people like you take that step, it gives everyone else permission to do the same. Mm-hmm. And when you take a leap and you leave the confines of that comfy, we call it comfy, it's really not comfy, it's just known, and you get a paycheck.
Right.
You get a paycheck, you can rely on the paycheck, and you know what the expectations are. You've kind of bought into the exchange of value there. But once you leave, there are so many others who are so afraid to leave.
Oh, yeah.
And all eyes are on you saying, will she survive? Oh, my God, she's going out there. She's going out on her own. Oh, my God, she's being herself. Is she going to live through this? People live vicariously through you.
Yeah.
And I know that for a fact. And that was part of my commitment to not going back, is that if I don't stick through this and if I don't make this work, then I won't be paving the way for everyone behind me who wants a choice. And there's many choices that women want in life, right? Choices for reproductive freedom, choices, all sorts of choices in relationship, the freedom not to be harassed. but also the freedom to make money any way we choose.
Yes.
And I think that is the benefit and the promise and the miracle of entrepreneurship, is that you get to choose. You get to choose how you make money. You get to choose how you make an impact. You get to choose how to live in alignment with your values. And Andrea, you're a beautiful representation of that. So thank you. And there is no going back, So I want to turn the conversation toward what people need to know. So for those who are typically more successful in their entrepreneurial ventures, say, you know, they've got proof, they've been at it a few years, and media exposure would really be the next level for them.
Yeah.
That would help them generate more growth, more awareness for their business, get more clients, reach more channels. What are some of the ways that you work with people to get media exposure? Do you work with them to get media exposure or prepare for the media exposure that they've then landed?
I work with them to prepare for the media exposure that they've landed. But I can talk about both. In terms of getting media exposure, we can start there. So in terms of getting media exposure, there are just a few things that I tell people, I advise people to do. One, the easiest way to kind of get in, the first hit is usually the hardest one. The first and second hits are usually the hardest one. One, don't discount your local news station. I worked with a group of women entrepreneurs and thought leaders, and they're like, I want an op-ed in the Wall Street Journal. It's like, yes, I want that for you too, but you don't want to go in there. Well, one, it's like very difficult to do. That doesn't mean it's impossible, but they're going to want to see some traction too. You can't discount your local journalists and journalism organizations as if it doesn't matter. It absolutely does. So one, don't discount kind of the smaller circulations, your local channel. Two, I always say get in on the conversations that are already happening and add your input to it. So if you worked with young people, we're talking a lot about voting, Iowa just happened. Like if you're working with young people, and the way to add yourself into the conversation as it relates to the elections is just, how are young people thinking right now? I believe they might be the largest voting bloc this election for the first time in history. How can you reach young people? Like, those are the conversations that are already happening. What is your unique take on the conversation that's already happening? When I worked with women in the past, they often say, like, they'd have this something that's very important, yes, that they want to talk about, but no one's talking about it right now. Like, there is no link to anything else. You've never gotten any media exposure, and you want to talk about what you want to talk about, where you want to talk about it. It just doesn't work that way. You have to get in on a conversation that is already happening and offer your unique value proposition to that. Third is knowing what outlets you're going to target. Everyone is not created equal. Everyone, just because we're all local news, doesn't mean we target all the same people. You know, like Fox has long morning shows that are experiential. So if you have a product like a baked good or whatever, your local Fox morning show would be a great place for you to come and talk about it. If, you know, ABC has something different, CBS is like legacy and it's older and stuff. Like, you just have to know who you're targeting and what they do. People would email me about like dogs and animals. Like, that's not, I don't know. I don't talk about that ever. You know, like, that's, I'm not in the animal segment that they have when I'm anchoring. I don't even do the animal segment because that's just not my thing. But you're not paying attention, so you're sending it to me and it's a waste of time. So you have to know where you're sending your pitch to and who you're sending it to. Not saying like, I'm just going to blanket everybody. That's a terrible approach to it. And then the last thing is just logistically send it in the morning. I say between 7:30 and 9 a.m. your pitch in the morning. That way it can be considered during the morning editorial meetings. If you have an event, to get the most chances of having coverage, you want your event to be between Monday and Friday, between like 9 and like 2, to get the highest chance of coverage, because that's when all the newsrooms have like the most people there, just like logistically. If you have it on the weekend, there are fewer people, less chance that you can get your thing covered. But those are kind of some of the boundaries that I think you should really consider when pitching an outlet.
And as the chief creative officer or coach of Mountainport Media, what are some of the ways that you're working with clients to get them prepared for those media opportunities once they've landed them, once they've found that something that's relevant? And I love your advice of, you know, number one, go local. Number two, get ready, get into the conversations that are already happening and know what outlets to target. Be relevant. Don't pitch people, you know, things that they're not interested in or aren't relevant. I mean, I get pitched things all the time for the podcast that aren't relevant for what we talk about.
Right.
So how do you work with clients in your coaching or consulting practice? And I know you do both B2B as well as working with individuals.
Yes. And so the biggest thing is that when you're getting prepared is, what do you want to say? What do you really believe about the thing that you're going to talk about? What do you want to say? So that's whether, you know, if you're representing a broader company, then you have to understand kind of what the framework is around that. But what is it? What's the thing that you want to land? That's number one. Number two, don't bury. We call it don't bury the lead. Say what you've got to say, say it again, and then tell them what you just told them. Right? You can never repeat it too much to make sure that you're landing your message. So many people wait to be asked that perfect question then to land their message. No, you want to land your message as soon as possible in the interview. Three, you want to make sure that you're preparing for some off-topic questions to be asked. You know, so if there's something that might be controversial in that space, we see it all the time. Executives getting on national television, there's a crisis at hand, they're asked a question, and they stumble, fumble, and bumble. And I sit there like, who's their team? Who did not prepare them? This is the most obvious question, and they have not constructed an answer for it. You have to understand what else is happening in the space tangentially, what other questions you might be asked, and create the answer before you get asked that question of what you're going to say. Also, if you get some of those questions, don't make things up on the fly, right? So just pivot away from that question and saying, well, this is what I believe. There's some ways that you can pivot. This is what I believe. Or if they say something that's not rooted in fact as a premise for the question, you want to make sure that you correct it in real time. Or our data states that XYZ, and then you can bridge to what your perspective is on that topic. So you just want to know how to kind of pivot the conversation if it starts getting a little bit tense. But the biggest thing I would say is understanding what you want to say in the conversation and making sure you land it. And again, it goes back to having the data to support it, having the anecdotes to go with it. So you want to have the data to say the facts and figures, but you also want to say, if you have a service, you want to, for example, how have your customers used it and benefited from it? I had this customer who, when she went through our program, she 10x'd her income, you know, or I've had, you know, a stay-at-home mom who you're telling the story about it, right? Like, you always want to have a story, you want to have a fact, and you want to have share your why and why you got into this and why you care about it in the first place.
Yeah, and that's great. Just foundational premise for good communications, not just interviewing, right?
Yeah.
So let's suppose there's someone in our audience who has designs on being on the Today Show. I'm just going to make something up. So one of our listeners has a desire to be on the Today Show.
Yeah.
What would you say to that person? What advice would you give them on preparing for being on the Today Show? Because everything's possible.
Yes, it absolutely is.
Yeah, everything is possible. So where would they start? And what are just some of the steps that they need to take in order to get there?
So steps in terms of like booking it, or steps in terms of like being prepared? for it.
Of being prepared for a yes on the other end, yeah. Because I think you already covered some of this is, you know, go local. You know, if you're shooting for the Today Show, don't make that your first rodeo, right? Go out and get coverage in other places. So what would be that process? If the Today Show is my holy grail, what do I need to do to position myself for that to be an easy yes for the show producers?
Oh, okay. Fantastic. One, it's sharing all of your wins when you're pitching them. And I've been seeing here, because they want to see that you can perform on camera. That's why I say like local news, it's lower barrier, but you use that, you leverage that for the Today Show because they want to see, oh, she's great and she can interact on camera. That's the biggest thing. In terms of what you're going to pitch, their audience, morning show, moms, it's women-centered. So whatever you're doing, it has to have a women-centered focus. But it depends. Like the third hour is a lot lighter. It's not as hard. It's not as hard news. It's more lifestyle. Earlier, like from 7 to 8 is harder news than 8 to 9. You know, and it's just like, it's just different in terms of like the segment. Mm-hmm. But then you book it. Amazing. They're going to fly you up to New York. This is your moment. Be present. Mm-hmm. Once you're there a lot, when the lights, when you're getting mic'd up, you can get out of your body. You want to make sure that you are in your body and present. If for anything, so you can remember the moment. You want to practice beforehand what you're going to say. Say it out loud. There's no practicing in your mind. Get in front of a mirror and start talking. You're going to feel weird. Great. That means you're doing it right. And start talking so you can see yourself, so you don't have to worry what you possibly look like because you've already seen yourself say the words, right? Where this is also like getting to nitty gritty. Wear something that you love. Wear something that makes you feel great. Wear something that makes you feel comfortable and beautiful. If you can, put on a pop of color. Don't go put something on that you're uncomfortable in, since you have to pulling your clothes. That's the worst thing, right? Wear something that makes you feel like $1 million. And then have fun. Have fun because, you know, the hosts are so trained. They're not going to be there to see you fail.
Right.
They're going to be cheering you on too. The producers are going to prep you beforehand. You're going to have calls beforehand before it happens. They don't just plop you on and see what happens. There's a whole process. But you want to make sure you have fun. They're there to help you. If you lose your word, they're going to be there to help you find it. They're there to help you succeed. So you really want to go in and have fun. And before you blink, it'll be all over because it's only a few minutes and it feels like 2 seconds once you do it. But yeah, that's what I would say.
Oh, I'm so excited. Like, I want to work with you right now and go pick some local news station. I was thinking Long Island TV. I could get on Long Island TV. That would be so much fun.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, News 12, all of those, like all of those would be very easy for you to get on. And especially another thing to do in terms of like finding when to fit in. We've got Women's History Month coming up. That's probably the easiest pitch. If there's something like a cause, if it's autism awareness, if it's like there, everything has a month. There's always a story about the month, the week, the special day. And so you pitch them, you know, just a few days ahead. For Women's History Month, they're going to be planning for it in February. So you really want to pitch maybe by the second week of February, the latest for the Women's History Month, as they're, you know, planning it out and stuff like that. But that's what I always say is just like, it can be the news of the day, but it can also be around a month, a time, kind of stuff like that.
Great advice. Andrea, I could talk with you forever, but we've come to the end of this episode and even gone a little bit long, which is fine with me. You are the host of the Next Best Thing podcast.
Yeah.
Tell us about your podcast and how listeners can tune in.
It is everywhere on your favorite podcast platforms and on YouTube. We're all about me helping you live the life that you design so you don't have to live the life that you think you have to settle for. So that's what the Next Best Thing is. And Deb is on. She'll be on in February. So we're very excited about that.
So excited to be on your show and to do this podcast interview swap with you. It's a lot of fun.
Yes.
It's a lot of fun to get to know you in this format as well. how else can people get in touch with you if they're interested in your media training?
Yes. So you can go ahead to my website, AundreaCT.com. It's AundreaCT.com. And then you can find out about all my things there. Also, I'm on all the socials, Instagram, LinkedIn, TikTok even. So yeah, you can reach me wherever is the easiest for you to reach me. I'll be there. So
that sounds great. I can't wait to tune in.
Yes.
And we'll put all your links below in the show notes. So if anyone wants to get in touch with you, they can just click through. Andrea, thank you so much for your generosity and joining us here today.
I loved being here. Thank you for having me.
Oh, it's so fun. That's it for now, my friends. I expect everyone to get some local TV news coverage. So post and reach out to us if you took Andrea up on her advice and you actually implemented it and got some coverage. We'd love to hear from you. And that's it for now. We will be back next time with some more great advice, techniques, and tools and strategies for you to amplify your voice and be seen and heard as the brilliant entrepreneur that you are. Thank you, Andrea.
Thank you so much.
See you next time, my friends. Thanks for listening, my friend. If you enjoyed this show, please head over to iTunes and subscribe and leave us a review. And be sure to hop over to the Life After Corporate Facebook group and join other growing entrepreneurs to get weekly tips on how to create more money and meaning doing work you love.